This is the order of battle!
This is an Operation Recall concept creator interview. Last year, I sat down with Joe Goldston, who was the concept creator of then Supply Chain, which is now Scrounger with a pet cheetah, Luna. And at the time, color studies were wrapping up. Operation Recall has evolved since then, so we do not get into topics such as the sculpting or the package design. This conversation is fantastic, as Joe has had a different view of Operation Recall than many of the other concept creators, and we dig into some of that process. There are more Operation Recall interviews and updates to come. Keep an eye on this project. It's going strong. And thank you, Joe, for sitting down with me. I really had a fun time with this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Your character has changed names a couple of times, hasn't it?
At least once, yes. You know, when I submitted it, it was Supply Chain. Larry changed it to Scrounger.
But there was also a point where you, the Supply Chain and Runback, were smushed and then unsmushed.
Yeah, they were kind of merged, smushed together. Basically, it was like, all right, let's take this from Runback and give it to this guy. And okay, I didn't really see him as being like a tech guy, especially since he's based on my grandfather. who, when I told him to open a window, he literally got up out of his chair and walked over to the window and then looked at me confusedly. When I gave him one of it was an old Windows 95 machine. He was like, hey, I really want to like look at stocks online. I hear that's a thing, right? And I was like, all right, well, you got to get the internet too. But yeah, it was the very first time. I was like, all right, so now you need to open a window. And yeah, we were done. Basically, my grandmother used it to play bridge and he never touched it again.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's funny. So I didn't know that Supply Chain was, or I guess Scrounger was based on your granddad. That's very cool.
Yeah. And I, you know, honestly, I don't remember what my first moment of inspiration about it was, other than I was thinking, okay, you know, I want to submit a design, you know, just because why not? You never get a chance like that again.
Did you only submit one?
Just the one. Yeah.
Nice.
I thought about doing some more, but it was kind of a last minute, not a last minute thing, but it was like, I was kind of late to it. I also just felt a little weird about it because, you know, I mean, Carson's a friend and I knew about all this stuff long before it even became a thing. And, you know, I felt a little weird about it. So
were you attached to the project whenever you got chosen?
I wasn't really prior to that, other than just hanging out with Carson and, you know, spitballing about this, that, and the other thing, and just being a friend, being plugged in, connected to it. You know, I mean, Carson and I met because of G.I. Joe, right? So we met through an online deal. You know, I had some extra Sideshow figures, and so I threw a few up on eBay, and he bought one, and then he's like, hey, I see you're, you know, in Durham, like I'm in Raleigh, do you want to just beat up? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And so we met out in the parking lot of his job at the time. You know, it was like this, you know, back alley toy deal.
Exactly what your parents warned you about, meeting strangers off the internet.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, Carson, so, you know, really outgoing, you know, we hit it off, you know, right off the bat, just talking about G.I. Joe and toys and, you know, obviously from the same era. You know, and he's like, hey, I've got this G.I. Joe room, you know, you should come check it out. And yeah, I mean, you know, our friendship kind of evolved from there. And I don't remember exactly. I think initially he had like a Facebook page called the G.I. Joe Museum, which was basically just photos of his toy room. And then he's like, I want to do an archive, like a website. And I think he had come across the spinning 3D technology. He's like, yeah, it'd be great to be able to like go in and, you know, look all around the toy and zoom in and, you know, do all the fun stuff with it. And so he's like, I'm going to, you know, and he's like, I found, you know, 3D Joe's, you know, was available, .com was available. So he got the website. And so at one point I was in his little Joe room doing spins of like every figure and vehicle, like 82 to 85 or whatever. And I'm like, and literally there was one day, I think he was busy and I was just sitting in there by myself doing spins for the website. We would go to JoeCon together every year. I mean, and JoeFest too. So we've like always been kind of like traveling buddies.
That's awesome.
So I was like, I don't know. And like, I don't want him to feel like, oh, they got to pick my figure because I'm a good friend or anything. And which he wasn't going to do, right? He's like, this is all up to those guys. But yeah, I just felt awkward submitting a design. But finally I was like, you know, I kind of want to do one. And so my thought process initially was, okay, well, what are some figures that we didn't have in G.I. Joe? What are some roles, right? Some characters. The quartermaster obviously was one of those ideas. And my grandfather was actually a supply officer for the Navy during World War II. And I was like, yeah, it'd be great. I'll honor my grandfather, do a quartermaster. I mean, he wasn't a quartermaster, but, you know, a similar type role. Because I didn't want to be exactly based on him.
Sure.
You know, he had a neat story because during World War II, you know, they'd send some German prisoners over here. So he actually had a couple German prisoners under his charge, and he became lifelong friends with these guys because they weren't SS, right? They were German regulars. They were drafted in the army. You know, they didn't like the Nazis anymore than anybody else at that point. They were happy to be prisoners, happy to be in the United States. So he became lifelong friends. They exchanged Christmas cards every year well into their 70s. Just a kind of a neat story. So I put that in there in the submission. And then supply chain was just, you know, we were having supply chain issues. So I was like, well, that's a perfect name for quartermaster, right? That's what they deal with. That's their world, right? I thought it was a fun name.
It's great. You know, I didn't know Scott before all of this popped off. And when Scott and I were talking about, you know, he has the similar thing of you, is he was looking for roles that were unusual. And he comes up with a supply person.
Yeah.
Of Runback. And I was like, one, how wild is it that the same concept unearthed in this process? And then, you know, the five liked both of them enough to push both to the top. And how different the two are.
Yeah. So different. So different.
When they got mushed together, you know, I was kind of just watching, being like, all right, well, I mean, what's this going to look like? And then I was talking to Scott about, should the two of you guys do this together or not together? Because it was technically two different things. And at first he was like, yeah, sure, we should do it together. No, you should talk to Joe about it. And then, well, we're unsmushed. So it was really nice that the two ideas live on their own. And while complementary, are not the same. I mean, they're not even the same flavor. They're just complementary.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I, you know, obviously I was sitting there at the time observing because I was recording audio for Carson. So he was recording the session. Yeah, it didn't sit well with me at the time. And it wasn't my idea getting changed or merged or anything like that. What it was I felt really bad about Scott's.
Sure.
Because it's a great figure. It's a great design. And it was a story that worked together and made sense. And when they kind of broke it apart, they both lost something that I thought was critically important. And as I said earlier, you know, my grandfather was not a tech person at all. In his doctor's office, he was a podiatrist. You know, he would, if there was anything in, you know, that had to be done on a computer, you know, he would get one of the, you know, the administrators to do it, right? Here are my written notes. Please put these in the computer. So that felt a little odd to me. It was, you could see that a lot of like thought and care and love went into the Runback story. And I didn't want to see that lost. So actually during the campaign, I reached out to Scott. Like I emailed him and I said, hey man, I really think that these should be split apart. I think Runback should come back into you know, into the fold. And here's my thought process around that. Because I wanted to get his buy-in before I went to Carson to say, hey, I think you should split these up and pull Run Back back in. So talking to Scott, you know, I was like, I really see these as two very complementary yet contrasting characters. I mean, you've got older white male, you know, young Asian female. You've got techie versus kind of the old school whatever.
Well, the old school has a cheetah.
That was a later ad. I'll circle back to the cheetah in a minute.
Okay.
But again, to your point, that's a living animal versus the electronic dog.
Right.
Every little element of these characters was grossly contrasted. Cheetahs are cool. They're the fastest land animal on Earth. And I have a beautiful little orange cat named Luna. And this is my little tribute to her, was pulling Luna into the fold. And yeah, I just thought, okay, this guy's, you know, at least well-traveled. He's done supply work all over the world. And at some point he came across this baby cheetah that had been, you know, captured by smugglers or whatever and took her into the fold. And, you know, and cheetahs are actually one of the more domesticatable or trainable of the wild cats.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's actually, if you look at the Cincinnati Zoo, like on, you know, on Instagram or one of their, they actually have a cheetah named Rosa, who's actually basically part of a dog pack. She has two dogs that she just hangs out with, runs with, and plays with.
I had heard that zoos around the world were putting dogs with cheetahs because it helped with anxiety and depression for the cheetah. Mm-hmm. So to hear that the one is running with two dogs, I think that's very cute. It's very sweet. Now I need to go find this.
Yeah, yeah. I actually every now and then would send one of those pictures, those posts to Carson.
Well, you are not the only person who has taken a personal loved four-legged friend and slotted him into this. So that's very cool to know that the cheetah was your homage to your own small lap friend.
I wish she were a lap friend. She actually is. And this is the other reason why she was apropos for being kind of connected to a wild animal. She's pretty much feral. She's very sweet. Like, I can pet her, but you cannot pick her up. She will not get in my, she will get in my wife's lap, but she will not get in my lap. she just has all the feral characteristics. We got her. She was actually dumped with her brother, who's the absolute opposite, at our vets.
Oh, wow.
And my wife's cat that she raised from a baby had literally just passed like a week or two earlier. And so she went to the vet and asked them if they had any kittens that she could just kind of foster a look at over the holiday. And they're like, yeah, these were just dropped off, you know, the other day in a box, and, you know, feel free to take them home.
It's still the holiday, right? Years later.
Yes. The holiday never ended. And that's partly my fault too. Like, she was, you know, sweet, adorable cat. And I was like, you know what, we're the perfect people for her. Right. Cause we understand cats, you know, we respect their kind of their world and their way of operating.
Their autonomy. Yeah. I am also very much a cat person, so I get it. I love the story of this cheetah even more now. I would not have guessed that you had based this on your grandfather, but in looking at the artwork that Mark Pennington put into this, it has a very old world feel, like almost that like Indiana Jones or like Dr. Jones the Senior kind of feel to it, where you've got the fedora and the pipe and the horn-rimmed glasses, the very upright back. Good posture. It's a fun looking character, and it's coming with a pipe accessory, which is wild. I don't know how they're going to sculpt that to be able to sit in a hand as well as look good on the face, but I can't wait for it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm wondering if with the wrist articulation, if there's an opportunity for like an additional like pipe holding hand. At the same time, he's also going to have like a pad, and I don't remember if the pad's going to be removable or not. I don't recall, but if there's a way to just mold the hand so that maybe there's like a little handle or some little grip on the back of the pad, but then also he could be just holding the pipe, like he's getting ready to put tobacco in it or he's getting ready to smoke it. So it's maybe not something that the mouth, I think, would be a little challenging. And also it probably look really weird if he doesn't have the pipe in it.
With a hole in his face? Sure.
But, you know, obviously, you know, I leave that up to the sculptors and whatnot to sort out. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love how the character has evolved thus far, and excited to see what, you know, as I know everybody else, I've seen the chat. It's been blowing up about, you know, all the different color potentials. And, you know, I remember when Mark showed them to me at JoeFest, and I was like, oh, you could pick, you know, yeah, these pants and that shirt, and then maybe, but this design over here. And he's like, wait, that's Kirk's job. You're art directing. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I was like, oh, they all look pretty great. You know, I, you know, obviously put my feedback in like everybody else did and kind of picked my two favorites. And, but honestly, any of them would probably be fine.
That is one thing that my first conversations with you guys happened while the Kickstarter was still going and we were still kind of curious what was happening. And then some of the others were during and after the ideation phase. And now we're beyond that, where we've seen some of the sculpting, we've seen some of the body parts, the two ups, and some of the equipment. We have added people to the program, like Mark Gerwig, and I can't remember the name of the other sculptor that's been added in. And, you know, we might be adding some people in for the master paints and things like this. And so we're now at a point where the color studies, they were almost done at JoeFest. Just a couple away from finishing the color study phase. And because of that, that didn't get laid out at JoeFest. And so people didn't get to come through and see all of it at JoeFest. But I know, like you just said, Mark showed you your colors. He showed me colors in part of Carson's presentation. I think he showed off maybe some of Lilith's colors, or I can't remember which character it was. I think it was Lilith, but he showed off some, or maybe it was Bearclaw, but he showed off some of the color studies in his presentation. You know, as we come down from the high of JoeFest, we get that next hit where Carson sent out, he put together a video with everybody's color in it, and he asked for feedback from all of you guys. For me, I'm not one of you guys. Alexander is. So I just quick and dirty, pause, print screen, slap into, you know, into one photo, and I get the blank and then all of the colors that Mark did for Shh. And then I sit down and I write out all the different little body parts and everything. And I'm talking to Alexander through how to look at the color study. Cause his first is like, oh, I love number three is great. He's like, but does a ninja wear neon? And I'm like, well, that's perfect. Number three is your overall, but let's kind of go through and, you know, like number five is the closest to your original submission. So use that as your baseline. What do you want to change from number five based on what you see here? Is there anything you want to add or subtract? Anything you want to do? And I'll make the notes. I'll type it all out because I'm the one with the Facebook. And we did that. And I tried really hard not to give him my opinion, but just to solicit his. Now, for you guys, it's harder because you have to give your opinion. You have to do the work. And you don't have dad over your shoulder helping you through it. You know, for you, how did the color studies land? Like, is as a general whole, I know you gave your condensed ideas, but as a whole, some of them are kind of wacky. Some of them are really realistic. There's a little bit in between. How did it land for you?
Yeah, you know, at one point I had a little bit of a, I don't want to call it like an aha moment, and it certainly didn't happen like overnight or anything like that. But I started to just let it go a little bit because I found myself succumbing to some of my, you know, attachment.
Yes.
To the original concept. And so, and I think that really happened like when I saw the initial sketches from Mark, and, you know, some of them were pretty different. Right. You know, at first I was like, you know, when Carson was like, all right, you know, feedback time, I'm like, well, A, I don't necessarily want to respond publicly, and I certainly don't want to have my initial reactions go straight to Mark. Although Mark, I think, would have been, you know, fine with whatever, you know, if any criticisms I had. But I was like, you know what, I'm feeling way too attached. So by the time the color studies came around, And especially after I saw the kind of that final drawing and was like, I mean, they could probably paint in blue and I'd be okay with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's such a beautiful.
It's such a just a wonderful design. So, yeah, I thought they all had possibility. Right. And I wouldn't be upset with any single one of them or a combination thereof. I'm an 80s kid. Right. And I'm an early 80s. You know, I was there day one with G.I. Joe, and I was like the perfect age, like 9, 10 years old. And I started out playing with the little green army men. So these were like, wow, articulated little green army men, you know, with removable guns and can pose and do all this cool stuff. So that's kind of, you know, where my love started. The bright neon crazy colors of the 90s, some of them look great just aesthetically. Whether you're thinking military or not, they look great aesthetically. So I'm still probably a little old school. And so some of the brighter, more, you know, outlandish colors and patterns, those don't appeal to me. And I don't think I'd be as excited about the character if he ended up that way. But if it looked good aesthetically, I could live with it. I could totally live with it. Most of my comments have always been like, okay, trying to echo the voice of the customer a little bit. And not me as the customer, but like, some of the feedback that came out through the Kickstarter campaign, where people were gravitating to supply chain and the CB character and some of the more traditional military style, like Lilith, I think, as well, to a certain degree, characters, because, you know, it's like a lot of the guys served in the military and they want to see representations of themselves as part of G.I. Joe, a military, you know, force. So, you know, I just, you know, that was always my feedback, is like, hey, remember some of the elements that people are attracted to in this character. I mean, you do want to sell a few of these guys, right? Like that is not maybe the initial goal, but, you know, at the end of the day, with all the money raised and all the money that will be spent beyond that, you know, you at least don't want to end up in the hole. So, you know, people are going to buy this character if it's a little bit more representative.
You know, it's something that I was having a private conversation with Scott and Chad and Chris and Ian. I was noticing that with the color studies, a lot of the color studies were skewing more toward the realism of military versus the fantasy of G.I. Joe. And I think that's definitely a product of our age. My concern is that it makes them less toyetic and more realistic. But outside of A and Bobby, are a lot of kids getting these in their stockings, right? So maybe it should be a little more realistic. And that was where I always have to, one, balance like where we as a community are at and where toys are marketed today, because they're not really marketed to kids anymore. But then also, Kirk's been in this industry a long ass time. He knows what toyetic is. He knows how to sell it. It'll be fine. So I was noticing that. The other thing I noticed was that, or Scott noticed it, and when he said something about it, I went back and I looked, and how right he was, that a lot of you guys, A included, didn't really go off script that much. It was kind of worked with the palette that was shown. Instead of being like, oh, I don't see any blue out of these 8 color studies, I think it should be blue instead. You know, like nobody did that. Everybody stuck to the color studies as shown and moved pieces around, which is cool. It's very respectful to the people, to Ron and to Mark. But, you know, I expected there to be a lot more like, oh, I don't see a green version in all your color studies. Why didn't anybody choose green? So I saw some of the stuff that you and Carson were sending back and forth with the pictures and everything and looking for that realism. And I think these are going to go so well once they're on table, once people can buy them at shows or on websites, and because they are very much aimed, like you just said, at the people that serve, at those that are collecting in their 40s and 50s. I don't know how many sets are coming to this house, but I know there's enough for army builders, and I know there's enough that these are absolutely going to end up in play. And I think for someone like Scrounger, especially, it is awesome that he be bent more toward realistic, because he comes with a cheetah. The toyetic is his pet, and it's silly and amazing. And I love how many pets are in this.
Yeah, me too.
So good. Everybody loves freedom and junkyard and law. And having that here is really damn special. It gives a good balance when you have the realism of Scrounger with the fantasy of Luna.
Exactly. And I think the other thing too, and I was kind of kicking myself for not incorporating that into the design initially, or at least the written story around the guy. And you know, and I guess I'll have to credit the mashup to actually kind of inspiring me to add that element, because it works. It works. It's fun. And it definitely, like you said, adds to that play value for the character.
So with the mashup, it was going to be basically Scrounger with the robot dog?
Yeah, it was.
Well, I'm glad that got resplit out, because I really like Runback as a character. I like her look. I like how playful she looks. And especially, as you've already said, like the contrast between your guys' two characters standing next to Scrounger. It's very kind of cool. And I know early on, Scott did a piece of art that had your two characters hanging out together. The older master, the younger upstart, Cheetah, the robot dog. I mean, there's going to be so much play value in that by itself.
Yeah, I loved his artwork. I loved his artwork. And that was the other thing I had to separate myself from, was his artwork. You know, Scott's not designing these characters. You know, it's Mark and Ron and Kirk and the whole design teams.
We had to do the same with very early on. A lot of people threw some really fun Ninja with a Robot Leg artwork up. You know, I even made stickers of a couple of the designs that a friend of mine who is not in our community did. I mean, he loves G.I. Joe and he does buy G.I. Joes, but he's a Star Wars guy. But he immediately was captivated with the idea, threw a piece of artwork up there, and I loved it. And if that had been the design, I'd have been happy. But the design is so very much what we all think of with Ninja with Robot Leg versus how far Mark and Kirk pushed the design. So I had to do the same thing as you're saying with Scott's art, is like, just take a step back and be like, all right, these are fun. But now that we have the true design, now I'm really curious to see what kind of like fan art comes out of these 16 characters. And although I know Scrounger and Luna are supply chain experts, I want to see them, you know, in the thick of it. You know, Dark Reapers closing in, pipe in one hand, pistol in the other. The cat beside him with shit on her back, because she still has to get supplies there, right?
Everybody has to go through basic training, right? Everybody has to be prepared to stand on the front line.
Right. I'm very excited by it. I'm very excited to put it into play here at our house. You know, I'm excited to put these guys on Raging Spoon's complex base. Having meetings with Grindstone's callsign Longbow as Dark Reapers and Cadavers fly in on RoboSkull. I'm so about it. And at Joe Fest, I got to see some of the Delta 17 up close and personal, but I don't know those guys. I need to introduce myself because I liked their designs. And, you know, I saw that, you know, there's some other, there's more O-ring coming. There's more coming. And to have Scrounger and Luna in the mix, providing supplies, fighting their way to the front line, fighting their way out of it, being that umbilical cord for these troops, while Runback and Pack Dog are the umbilical cord for a different set of troops, and while, you know, the tiger sharks are coming out of the water, and I'm very excited by this whole damn toy line. But you said you were like 9 or 10 in 82, so you're just a couple years older than I am. How long did you stay into G.I. Joe?
Not too long. It's never too long, right? Because I'm still into G.I. Joe. So I've never gotten out of G.I. Joe since I started.
Really? So even through high school, you were able to maintain?
You know, I was probably one of those, you know, you probably kind of refer to me as maybe a bit of a late bloomer. You know, I wasn't really ready to let go of my toys when I think you're probably supposed to.
Sure. I mean, I ran them till 15 before I took my teenage break. But I know there's a lot of guys in this group, in your group of concept creators, that never did.
My break was probably somewhat forced because we moved. And so it was right around that, 14, 15 year old, year period where we had a pretty major move from Austin, Texas to Orono, Maine. Literally everything got packed up and put into storage. Some stuff ended up at my dad's, and then I had a, kind of a year in Maine. So by the time I had the opportunity to sort of reunite with any of my toys, I'd had enough separation where, and I won't say that I didn't pull them out. I feel a little guilty saying this over a recording, but the summer that I went to visit my dad's and the ones that he had, I literally took him outside, set him up, and pulled out my old Daisy BB gun and started picking him off. Because, you hit that chest just at the right point, and it literally, arms fly, legs fly.
I remember doing, I never did the BB gun thing, but I remember some friends in high school found some old Joes in their house and put them in a cup of gasoline and lit that on fire, and were throwing rocks into it to make the little mushroom cloud. And it wasn't my Joes, because I don't know what happened to my Joes, but I was there. And like looking back on it, like you have that bit of like guilt and shame, but we were teenagers. We had teenage hormones and teenage ideas, and we did dumb shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously considering how much some of those would be worth today, because I'd taken pretty good. I mean, I played with my toys. So they weren't by any stretch of the imagination, like mint condition or anything like that. But they, a lot of them were in pretty good condition, especially since, these in particular, it mostly sat at my dad's house and would only get pulled out in the summertime. So they didn't get a lot of play over the course of a year or years. Yeah, I'd say really from, age 10 to, 14, 15, I was an obsessive collector of G.I. Joe. I think I had everything through 1985 with the exception of the flag. I did not end up with a flag as a kid. We moved a lot growing up, which is probably why I have an unhealthy attachment to toys even as an adult, because I would often have to abandon, I had a whole squad of G.I. Joes at my dad's. I think I had a few at maybe a grandparent's house, then the ones that at my mom's. And so... and they didn't get to travel with us everywhere. We moved as I was growing up.
I've talked about many times where I had to restart when I was like 12. I had a few Joes when I got shipped across the country, but I had to restart at that point. I was told very often that I would grow out of it. I'd grow out of it. And at 15, I finally put the toys down, but not the comic.
Yeah, fair enough.
By 25, I was trying to pick the toys up, but I was broke. I'm with you. Like, I moved a lot in my teenage years. So I'm familiar with the story. I'm familiar with sort of the, maybe that's part of the attachment. I don't know. I don't have a ton of childhood memories, so I never kind of put it on that. I'm always just like, I never grew out of it, but maybe that's why. I don't know. That's for a therapist to decide.
Yeah. Right. Well, this can be our therapy right here, Jason, I think.
So that's the funny thing. It was, I can't remember which Joe Con it was. It was one of the last Joe Cons. I didn't know Carson, but we have a lot of mutual friends. And so you were probably there, being that you guys have been road dogs for a while. It was at a restaurant, and I don't remember which restaurant, but one of our mutual friends is yelling for Carson, like, Carson, you got to meet Jason. Jason, hang here. You got to meet Carson. And Carson is surrounded by the people he knows. Everybody's talking because all of you guys are waiting for a table. And he was like, hey. And then went back to his conversation. And then that happened like two more different shows. Or was like, Carson, you got to meet Jay. And it's like, can you introduce us when he's not busy or I'm not busy?
Good luck at a convention and finding Carson not busy.
Well, I mean, with Joe Fest, he's kind of turned Joe Fest into a part-time job, which I'm sure saves him money. I probably should do better at that. So I'd met him in passing multiple times, but I didn't know him until kind of this started. And I saw you a lot, and I knew you and he were friends, and you were part of that group of people. And you and I know several people, but I didn't really know you that well, to the point where we're hanging out and I didn't realize you were Scrounger.
Yes.
And so, which is one, a bit typical me, but also typical of our community, right? Like, we're a small community, but we feel and we act like a big community. And even in a small community, you can't know everybody, much as I try, or you and Carson and everybody else tries. Like, we don't know everybody. So it was very funny of, hey, have you had a chance to talk to Joe? Yeah, I was just upstairs with him and Carson. No, about Scrounger. No, what are you talking about?
Why would I talk to Joe about Scrounger? Shouldn't I talk to the guy who submitted
Scrounger? And I don't know how much time you've spent with Scott since this all started, but this is, I've now got to hang out with Scott at a couple shows, and the way he just stares at me like, are you being serious right now? Are you fucking with me, or are you dumb? It's very sweet. I love him to death. But I'm looking at him like, why are you looking at me like that? And, you know, it just completely blanked on me. So I'm immediately running up to you and apologizing and acting awkward and weird.
You have no need to apologize, Jason. I'm a huge, like, I'm kind of, you know, Myers-Briggs off the chart and introvert.
And I'm the opposite.
So we're probably a good pair.
Right. Speaking of opposites, you also, I mean, you hang with Carson, who is clearly an opposite.
The other thing about Carson, you know, he claims that he needs his introversion time, and he spends a lot of time, like, on his computer, you know, designing books and other things, right? So
I think it's just because he can't sit still.
Yeah. But no, he's an extremely outgoing personality, right? Full of life and energy and enthusiasm. He's also extremely transparent, which is another thing that I both love. And every now and then, you know, he's like, oh, Joe, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, don't tell them that.
It was funny because he mentioned you several times when he was introducing Operation Recall, and he was talking about the submission review process right at the beginning. And that's why I was asking you in the beginning, like, did you submit Supply Chain Scrounger before you were attached to the project? Because I knew, like, you were in the room helping during that recording process. My assumption here has always been that it was a blind submission process. You know, like, they're looking at Supply Chain, but they don't know that Supply Chain is yours. They just know Supply Chain is a submission.
Yeah, that's true. And I didn't realize this at the time, but, you know, their connection to the character was guys that they'd worked with who served, who were quartermasters, like Bob Prupas.
Okay.
Right? One of the original.
You tapped into nostalgia for them.
Exactly. And it was, you know, obviously not my intent, although obviously I was picking, you know, being my grandfather, although, you know, older, not their generation, but, you know, essentially their parents' generation. So, yeah. And obviously older, you know, industry guys that they had worked with as well that also are from that generation. So, yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about it. That was obviously not in my thought process at all when I submitted it. You know, I thought that my selling point was it's a quartermaster. It's a character that you have to have in your military, you know, in your army to be successful. G.I. Joe never had a supply character at all, really. Certainly not at that level of, like, really, like, kind of running the entire army supply chain. But
A did three submissions, and the ninja was the one that Mark chose, right? Obviously. But one of the ones that did not get chosen was sort of a weaponsmith, blacksmith kind of character. Because he was like, somebody's got to make the weapons. Because G.I. Joe doesn't use normal military weapons. They use sort of sci-fi weapons. They use laser guns. He's like, I know this isn't G.I. Joe, but they need somebody who's making the weapons. So I think that was kind of the one he was hoping for the most, because it would be the one that came with the most gear, right? Because it would come with tongs and hammers and an anvil and parts of weapons.
That was part of my incentive for Supply Chain, too. Like, I gave them a litany of things that he might have in his crate, because I, like you, thinking about play value, I didn't, you know, obviously Luna was not in my mind's eye at the time, but I was thinking, all right, the character, kind of generic, kind of, military, probably, like you said, not going to have the exciting play value, visual, color, whatever aspects to him. I was like, but he's going to have a ton of accessories, right? That's going to be his selling point. He's going to have this, you know, big crate just loaded to the brim with all these things that none of the other guys would necessarily come with. So he's going to be kind of unique in that regard. That was definitely my thought process. It's funny you talk about, obviously there were over 200 submissions, so I don't remember the blacksmith. It's not jumping out at me, but you know, Word Burglar, of course, right?
Yes.
Welcome to Cobra Island. He submitted a character, and his character was the clothier of Cobra, right? I think he did say it was Cobra's clothier. You know, obviously we couldn't.
I think a lot of people use G.I. Joe and Cobra as their stand-in for whatever group. And I don't think Operation Recall really has a group still. Like, we just know it's Operation Recall. Like, and we don't have, like, we know it's Montefiero, but...
When we stop recording, Jason, I'll be happy to tell you about the idea that I pitched to Carson.
Perfect.
In terms of the story, because I was early days. I said...
He has mentioned this. So when he was on here, he mentioned that you had been writing. And we know that Ian Lilith has also been writing a lot of stories. He's even written Operation Recall characters that have died before Operation Recall gets here. And I know there were a couple of people that wanted to work on the comics, whether it be story or art. And then there's also the big hope that Larry does a comic writing, which, of course, erases all the stuff you've done or Ian's done or everybody else. But it's kind of what we were talking about with the fan art in the beginning before the ideation phase was even done. This is a clear indication of how exciting this brand is and can be, that we already have fan art, we already have fan writing, fan ideas, and hopefully it has the legs that if Larry does write the official story, there's still room, just like in G.I. Joe, where you have other people have done things that aren't Larry's G.I. Joe, right? We have a multitude of G.I. Joe worlds. I would love to have a Joe Operation Recall world. And an Ian Operation Recall world.
I think it could go so many, obviously, different ways. You know, my primary, I mean, and it wasn't, you know, I didn't have any initial intent to actually write stuff. You know, it was just driving home from Carson's late, you know, and I'm, you know, kind of in the midst of delirium. And, you know, sometimes that's when you have your best creative ideas, is when you're exhausted. I think because we were coming back probably from Joe Fest or something. And I think I even like pulled over to text him. I was like, I know you need to tell this Operation Recall story.
I hope there's room for this to come out at some point.
You know, I proposed some ideas around what you might call the actual team, you know, what their team name would be, what the enemy's team may be. So I like world building. To me, that's always the most exciting part.
I like file card writing. That's where I like to world build, is I like to come up with the personality and the tweak of the character.
Yeah. Well, Larry has done that work.
Oh, and his file cards are so good. He's lost nothing.
No.
And his file cards are a huge reminder of the G.I. Joe file cards. When they went from Hama to in-house marketing team, they lost the nuance. And everybody became very superhero-esque. And you can see that even today, Larry's cards have nuance and interest.
Personality.
Yes.
They have personality. You know, a lot of his cards, especially early days, were based on people he knew.
And he's clearly lost nothing in the file cards he's done for Operation Recall. His characterizations are as sharp as ever. His file cards have always been incredible, and they remain such with Operation Recall. I think that's one of my most exciting times, was just pausing YouTube videos to read everybody's file cards and just see like the breadth of life pushed into them just through the words.
You know, it's one of those things, like, you know, I've enjoyed the process of what I've done with it. And if it never sees the light of day, I will have had the joy of exploring it. And then I can go set up my figures and tell this story for me, myself, and I, and that's okay. Like I said, I want to be involved, you know, like everybody else who's involved in some level. And even those who aren't directly involved and done fan art are really kind of digging this project. And it's an opportunity for us who got to play with it and really enjoy G.I. Joe and kind of build our own little worlds, of getting to kind of explore it.
I think it's fun that this has inspired that level of creativity in so many people. I am really looking forward to these figures once they're in the hands of some of our toy photographers in the community. Even though Scrounger isn't probably the most dynamic, you know, M60 wielding Arnold Schwarzenegger character, his profile, his silhouette is so distinct with that pipe and the cat. I think your photographers are going to have a field day with this character. There's so much you can do with him. Direct combat to being in the warehouse and everything in between. It's such a versatile character. I'm really kind of looking forward to people who build dioramas and put this together and have the big $600 cameras with all the exposures and the effects. And, you know, I would love to see the dirt exploding around him as he's handing supplies to someone else.
Yeah, or Luna running medical supplies in the field with bombs blowing off all around her.
100%. Like, there's nothing about this character that is not compelling to me.
I can't wait. And I intend to do some of that photography work myself, although my world is more not the just the beautiful live action explosion kind of photography, but more I like stop motion animation. So,
okay,
that's where I want to play. I don't know if you ever saw it. Carson and I did a little stop motion called Joe's Anatomy.
I don't know if I ever saw that. I will have to look for it. In terms of stop motion, that could be real fun with a couple of bad guys with their helmets off. And suddenly you're replaying your grandfather's history with German POWs.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be awesome.
I love the idea of Luna running medical supplies. There's not really a team medic, although I'm sure there's plenty of people that have first aid capabilities or even advanced first aid capabilities on the team. So that would be very cool, especially with some of like the things that you or Ian have written where people are taking hits. I'm very excited by this. I'm excited by it. I'm excited by how well the color studies have come together, how everybody sort of rallied around it very quickly, pulled it together. Everybody had like, hey, these elements from these three, if you combine them. Multiple people went through and made their own combination with whatever Photoshop or MS Paint skills they had. We were very busy, but I had offered A the same option of I'll print out the blank. You can grab your pencils and you can put your own color study together of this combination or whatever you want. We were so busy, we didn't get a chance to do that before the deadline. But, you know, I saw the stuff that you and Carson were sending back and forth. It is very transparent. You really get to see everyone's opinions and you can tell where people have and have not let go a little bit. Mark and Ron and Kirk, they're professionals. They're not going to get their feelings hurt if you don't like Color Study 4, but they are very proud of their work. I had dinner with Ron and Jenny in May and, you know, he was telling me he had already finished his color studies or was very close to finishing them at the time. And he was talking about it. And he was very proud of like the work he's doing, you know. And then when I saw Mark at Joe Fest, within minutes of me mentioning, he had his portfolio out and he's flipping through and he's like, oh, I always do a silly one, you know. And he's like trying to preface like, hey, this next one I show you, it's not, you know, it's going to be a little weird. And it's his multicolored one. I think he did that for everybody. And I was like, no, I love that. That's awesome. Obviously, you're not going to be like, I like that one as is.
Yeah.
But you get to see all the different colors and weird parts put together.
Mark is amazing.
He really is. And he's so genuinely sweet.
He's sweet. He is such a kid.
Yes.
He's so inspiring because, you know, it's like he is the ultimate representation of us in a lot of ways because he is truly still living in that sort of 10-year-old world of creativity. I feel like I've lost a lot of that, and being involved in this project is starting to pull a little bit, you know, like writing a script even probably won't you know it won't do anything, but I was like, I'm exploring my own version of this universe and loving every minute of it. Kirk obviously did a great job of picking out elements from all these different designs, right, and kind of putting together a really tight design concept.
He still has a great eye.
Yeah, he's so detail oriented and imaginative too. He's a really creative guy. You know, I got to spend a little bit of time kind of being an observer through some of that process. And yeah, really, yeah, creative and thoughtful and detailed.
As an observer, how hard is it not to whoop whenever they get to something of yours?
Yeah, I, you know, obviously at that point, I really had to kind of like sort of look away or look down or whatever. I mean, they did know after once it had been selected, you know, it's like, all right, Joe, you know, now, you know, why don't you tell them a little bit more about the idea?
Well, yeah, once it's selected, it's no longer, it doesn't have to be a blind draw. They've already made their selection. They can't be influenced by who you are at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Once the blind draw is done, you know, being influenced by the concept submitter is a good thing, which is why Carson has had a couple different moments where he pulls back from the creative team, comes back to you guys and says, here's where we're at. Here's the time frame. I need your thoughts. Be polite, but be true to what you see and what you want and need.
I actually, I mean, because, you know, when he sort of first presented the idea, and I'll be honest, when he was pitching it to me and another one of our buddies who's in the, you know, obviously in the collecting world, we were both like, hey, do you really want to involve all these people in this, in your really expensive project? You know, because you're going to get a lot of opinions and, you know, you're going to have to manage all of that. But he's been pretty masterful about it. And very clear. I think because he's seen the passion and that which has also fueled him, he's involved the creative, the submitters, the community a lot more than was part of his initial plan. Initially, he was like, hey, submit your design ideas and we're going to basically take them and, you know, and run with them and do our own thing. But, you know, maybe you'll have an idea or two that kind of manages to resonate and survive. So the fact that, you know, he's like, all right, you know, here are the initial drawings. Give me your thoughts. Pick your favorite. Here are the initial colors. You know, give me your thoughts. Pick your favorites. Like, that was not part of the original plan.
That's amazing. Well, even part of the things is he's showing body sculpts and things like that. People have made comments in ways that he's gone, oh, that's interesting. And he's tweaked a few things. Like, he's clearly open to the best idea on the table.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, the whole, well, I mean, let's go back, you know, why I'm here having this conversation with you, you know, the supply chain run back thing, you know, that was initially my thought and Scott and I's sort of proposal back to Carson. I mean, I don't know if he ran it by the creative team or not, to be honest, because I wasn't involved. I just said, hey, Carson, based on, you know, feedback and my feeling and Scott's feeling. And we've had this idea that we think is really going to be good storytelling and, you know, yada, yada. And he's like, yeah. And then I proposed, I was like, why don't you put it to a vote? You know? And so that's when the Google form, you know, vote for your favorite characters kind of thing. I was like, you know, let's put Run Back in there. Let's put supply chain in there as separate characters and let people vote. And if they make the cut, they make the cut, you know, and not only did Run Back make the cut, but Run Back jumped ahead of the line. Right. So, you know, to me, it was validation, you know, not that Kirk or Mark or Ron or anything like missed the mark or missed the boat or anything like that, but all of these folks put a lot of time and effort and thought into these submissions, right? There were not, I don't recall there being too many that were just like maybe there was one or two submissions where people, you could kind of say, okay, they didn't really take much time with this, but for the most part, everybody put their kind of their heart and soul and like, this is your moment, right? Put all your cards on the table, throw it all out there. These are the people who are going to be buying these figures. And not only that, but they're the ones that are going out on social media and selling this. I mean, you've got a lot of free marketers in your arsenal here. So you know, throw him a bone or two, right? And he did, and he did. I mean, to his credit, to the creator's credit, I mean, nobody pushed back with supply chain. I don't even know if Kirk even, quite frankly, you know, remembered that they were, you know, two separate characters by the time, you know, got to, you know, actually looking at those initial drawings. So, I mean, he probably did, but I don't know.
This is part of the process, right? I'm sure there were a lot of characters that were floated or mashed together or unmashed or broken apart that, you know, we may never know because that's just part of their creative steps. It's part of their creative process. We are trusting the process based on what we see in the end. And since we have for that first like 8-9 years of the Kirk through Mark legacy and Bill and everybody else, like we know their process works. So we just trust. We may not know everything behind the scenes. And so had no one ever said anything about your guys' characters being put together and then unput together, no one would know. No one would know because we just trust in the end, the best idea made it through the gauntlet. And that's not to say that another idea was shitty. It was just that this one, whether it was 1% or 50% or 150%, well, each of these are the ideas that won the foot race through the gauntlet, right? To be able to talk to Ron or to Mark or to Kirk or to any of the others, to listen to them talk about the process is so captivating.
I have a feeling that once these characters, you know, truly do see see that kind of final form, I wonder how many people are really going to look back and even look at those initial designs anymore and think, you know, too much about them. Because I think those final products are going to be so exciting that it's wonderful to be a part of a journey like this.
This has been an Operation Recall Order of Battle.